the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we are off. It is a Friday, and it's wet, it's dreary, but who cares? You know, the way things have gone lately, if you have another day, enjoy it. Take advantage of it. Some great high school football going on tonight. We got a full slate of ball games. That'd be kind of a lie. At least I can say we've got some football coming up on this college football Saturday. Then, of course, it'll be week 11 in the National Football League. The Pittsburgh Steelers in town. This rivalry headed up by Jacksonville. They've won 14 of the 26. That's right. They have a two-game lead over the Steelers, 14-12. And, you know, that's newsworthy. You know, the Jaguars don't have a lot of series leads over other NFL franchises. You know, that's the bottom line. And here comes Pittsburgh. They're 9-0. They have arguably the best front seven in the National Football League. You know, they lead the NFL in sacks. They lead the NFL in takeaways. They're a dominant defense. And, you know, they allow only 19 points a game. That is third in the National Football League. That's going to be difficult. Then on the other side, man, are they ever electrifying. Offensively, putting up more than 30 points a game. And, you know, the numbers are exact. Pittsburgh scores 30.1 a contest. Jacksonville allows 30.1 a contest. Although the last couple of weeks, Jacksonville's done a better job on that side of the football. You know, we talked about it last week. Green Bay is a team who averaged more than 30 points a contest as well. And, you know, the Jaguars went through that long stretch. I think it was six consecutive games where they allowed more than 30 points. You know, in the last two, they have lost, but they allowed 27 here against Houston, and they allowed 24 out at Lambeau Field. And in both cases, they had opportunities, you know, to win those games. The failed two-point conversion by the Jaguars very late here against Houston two Sundays ago. And again, they got that football back for that opportunity to author a late fourth quarter come from behind victory. And it did not happen in Green Bay. The Packers defense really got after Jake Luton, who, of course, will be making his third start. And that'll be Sunday at 1 o'clock. Make sure you join us early in the morning. We'll have all the pregame beginning at 8 o'clock on both 1010 on the AM, in-game at 1, and post-game as well. As a matter of fact, we'll be I just saw Leon Searcy. We'll be out for his book signing and everything he's got going over at Island Girl on Gate. Great place, and still a couple of tickets available. I know they've been going quick. That begins at 6, so, you know, several people are going to be there. Really looking forward to it. A lot of ex-Jaguars are going to be there. I know my Jaguar broadcast partner on Radio Game Days, Tony Buscelli, he's going to be there. Some other Jags, former Jags as well, some former Pittsburgh Steelers. So that's going to be a big party, and really happy about Leon in his book, Fourth and Damn. So looking forward to being a part of that. They'll do the fifth quarter from there, 6-8, coming up at Island Girl on Sunday. Of course, the game will be broadcasted on the FM side as well. That is 92.5 FM. All right, the Jaguars are a beaten-up bunch. You know, we talked about it yesterday. C.J. Henderson shelved for at least 3 weeks. He's been placed on the injured reserve with a groin. The designation for return now has taken place for DJ Hayden. And, you know, yesterday, Doug Marrone on 1010 did state during his coach's show that Hayden will be activated and he'll be ready to go. He's missed a lot of time. He's been out since October 7th with a hamstring. So, you know, it hasn't been a great year for him, and it's not entirely his fault in this league. Especially now considering you're going back-to-back against future Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I mean, you just took on Aaron Rodgers, who's going to the Hall of Fame. Now you're taking on Ben Roethlisberger, who's going to the Hall of Fame. If you're not getting a pass rush, they're going to pick you apart. And I really thought Green Bay you know, gave it their best a week ago. They got out of there with the victory. I thought the Jags did a nice job defensively. Had a pick, probably should have had a second pick. But DJ Hayden hasn't had a great year. In my opinion, in 2019, he was the second best defensive player on the Jaguars. You know, outside of Calais Campbell, that's my opinion. 1 year ago, it feels like he's lost a step, maybe two. And I thought that Trey Herndon was playing better football now that he has been fully inserted into the slot when the Jaguars go into their nickel defense. Be interesting to see what Todd Wash elects to do tomorrow. All right, C.J. Henderson is out. Sidney Jones is not 100%. He is on the injury report with an Achilles, and he's really been downgraded. That's been kind of lost in the announcement today that came out that, you know, a couple of weapons for Jake Luton won't be able to go. Boy, bad news. Laviska Shenault Jr. again is going to be out with that left hamstring. I hate that for this young man. You know, he's so explosive. He's so fun to watch, and they can't get him on the field. Again, a couple of weeks ago against Houston when he went out as the sideline reporter, and this year I'm pushed back to the front row with the COVID protocol, really kept my eyes on him, and they did everything to try to get him loose. I mean, they stretched him. They put him on the bike. They did whatever. They just couldn't get it going. And, you know, obviously the cooler temperatures a week later in Green Bay, it's going to be very hard, and it was very hard to try to get him ready in those conditions. And, you know, now this week, he didn't go the entire week, and he's out. James O'Shaughnessy with a knee is not going to go. But kind of lost in all this is Sidney Jones, who's had a very good year. And, you know, this is intriguing for Jacksonville because, you know, they got him off the scrap heap, and he's played well. But you're trying to figure out, with him laying tape, is he the guy for this franchise? His contract is up at the end of the year. Are you going to pay him market value cash as a number two corner? And I'm sure his camp's going to say they believe he's a number one corner. Remember, he's a former second-round draft pick who battled injuries, including an Achilles. Now it's an Achilles again, you know, back in Green Bay, or excuse me, back in Pittsburgh, make that Philadelphia. Third time's a charm, right? But he was limited Wednesday and Thursday. He didn't practice today. He was downgraded with the Achilles, and he's officially listed as questionable. So, you know, what are the Jags going to do? Let's just say he can't go. For crying out loud. I mean, you could have a starting contain Sunday at 1 of Chris Claybrooks, Trey Herndon on the corners, and DJ Hayden in the slot. And the reason why I don't like it is this. Herndon's a better slot player than cover corner. Hayden hasn't gone in 6 weeks. He's coming off the shelf. Claybrooks is pretty good in man. He's not disciplined to this point in his career to play zone, and you have to play zone against Pittsburgh, right? At least for the majority of the time. You can't go man-to-man against Ben Roethlisberger. With those weapons, he'll kill you. I mean, he'll absolutely destroy you. And, you know, are they going to blitz more? Are they going to, you know, the great quarterbacks, you blitz them, they'll kill you as well. So, boy, I mean, it just, this Sidney Jones situation now all of a sudden is a little bit haunting. That rolled in a little bit earlier today. So, you know, we'll see, and we'll track everything. We'll see if anything does develop here over the next couple of hours. It's going to be a very difficult game for the Jaguars. And, you know, why not at this particular point? You might as well go for it. You might as well take some chances. You know, Pittsburgh, an opportunity perhaps for them to look ahead as, you know, they're staring at a rematch against Baltimore. And I want to say that game will actually be played on Thanksgiving evening. I'll look that up real quick. But, you know, Mike Tomlin's done a real nice job with that this week about not allowing, yes, that Ravens at Pittsburgh, so we'll be back at Heinz Field at 8:20 coming up on Thanksgiving evening. A real opportunity for Pittsburgh to do that, you know, to kind of overlook the Jags. But, you know, Jacksonville's always played Pittsburgh tough, so that's going to be an intriguing ball game. And again, that'll be here Sunday at 1 o'clock. All right, here's what's planned over the next couple of hours, all right? And we'll talk the NFL with Ron Jaworski coming up at 6 o'clock. Always entertaining to bring Jaws onto the program to get everything from him as far as, you know, what is happening in the world of the National Football League. So that's coming up at 6 o'clock. Brooke Pryor, who covers the Pittsburgh Steelers over at ESPN.com, she's going to join us in about 30 minutes. Looking forward to talking to her. And, of course, the legendary Tim Brando is next. So we're going to begin with a little bit of college football coming up tomorrow on this Saturday. Then we'll really make that transition to some heavy NFL talk. Just absolutely fired up to have you with us. It is a Friday edition with Rick Ballew. Let's go into the night. Joining us next from Fox Sports, it's our weekly conversation with Tim Brando.
Underway, Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
All right, Tim Brando, brought to you by State Farm, the number one auto insurance in America. Why not go to the number one agent in Jacksonville? That's my buddy Russ Voris, RussVoris.com. Combine your auto and homes together. No one does more as far as companies in America putting together home and auto insurance. So go to State Farm and right here in town, RussVoris.com. Tim Brando is in Ames, Iowa. My goodness, I can't think of anywhere else better that I would like to be outside of Jacksonville than Ames, Iowa. He's got a big one coming up on Fox, 4 o'clock Eastern, Kansas State taking on Iowa State. Timmy B, how are you?
Wonderful. Yes. Doing great. You know, staying positive and testing negative. That's what it's all about.
You need to coin that. You need to coin that one.
Yeah. It's spiking here too. They've had 25% capacity for every game except the Louisiana game that they lost to start the season. And they've had a spike here as most states have had. And K-State actually early in the week, Rick, they were borderline as to whether they were going to be able to get it done. They had only a few offensive linemen, but they're okay, and they're going to make the trip. The COVID tests, it seems, are in, and they're ready to go. And Iowa State, as you know, they hold all the cards in the Big 12. I mean, they control their destiny. They're 5-1. They beat Oklahoma mano a mano. Oklahoma State, of course, has lost the second time. Even though they beat Iowa State, they've lost the second time. So they're probably rooting for an Oklahoma victory in Bedlam. But Iowa State is in the best spot that you can be in. Now, they've got tough games left. They've got Texas after this. And Herman is trying to hold on to his job. So there's a sense of desperation, obviously, in Austin. But Matt Campbell's team is certainly in the best position, and they certainly strengthen that position if they beat Kansas State. And Kansas State's a tough out. I think we all know that. They're a very difficult team to beat. They let one get away 2 weeks ago at home to Oklahoma State, a game that they led 12-0 at one point, could not hold on and win. But we'll see. I think it's going to be a very interesting and entertaining weekend without question. It seems even with all these postponements, and I think we may be going over the 15 number that we had last week, this week, but still, we're getting great games.
We are.
That mean a lot, you know. And that's my takeaway from what's been going down recently.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, Florida State lost young quarterback Chuba Purdy, unfortunately,
right,
for the end of the season. He's had problems with that collarbone. His brother, Brock Purdy, has done a real good job once again this year for Iowa State.
He has. He had some turnover issues against Baylor 2 weeks ago, managed to overcome that, bring them from behind to win by a touchdown. I think Brock Purdy's going to be a pro. And I think he's going to be a very good pro. Probably won't go higher than number three or four round, I would think. Probably third or fourth rounder.
Mm-hmm.
But man, oh man, if you think Sam Ehlinger is really good, and I do, okay, I think Sam Ehlinger really is very good. The only thing holding Brock Purdy back is that he plays at Iowa State, and nobody really covers them.
Right.
You know, Iowa State could win the Big 12 for the first time since 1912.
Mm-hmm.
They've got one of the great coaches in America, a guy that the NFL tried to get, Pioli tried to get him, you know, for like 3 years, you know, after his first year at Iowa State, and couldn't convince him to come into the league. Already people are saying, what about Michigan? What about Michigan? There are whispers of that right now with Harbaugh potentially being out. Brock Purdy and Matt Campbell are both more popular as individuals than Iowa State is as a team. You know, more people know about those two individuals than actually know anything about the Iowa State Cyclone program, which is sort of emblematic of where the college football season and really what college football has become, unfortunately. It seems that if you're not one of the four or five teams that we're talking about being in, you know, the playoff, then nobody really wants to discuss you. But let me tell you, it's a big deal for Iowa State to win a conference championship.
No doubt.
If it happens. Listen, at Texas, it's about Herman saving his job. At Oklahoma, it's about, well, Rattler's great, but they're out of it in terms of they can't get to the playoff again. But you know, they got the most talent, and they've got these guys back that were suspended for half a season prior to the college football playoff last year. And Oklahoma State, it's about, well, you know, they could have been undefeated, then we'd care, but they're not, so now we don't. I'm telling you, Iowa State is the one program here that would look upon a conference championship as though it were a national championship. It mm-hmm. means that much to these people. There's a great article, I just retweeted it a moment ago, by Pete Thamel that you really ought to read about you know, where this guy came from, where Matt Campbell was at Division III Mount Union. He transferred from Pitt as a junior in college, and really what made him such a great coach. Rick, we just got off a Zoom with him about 2 hours ago. He's got to be the most transparent 40-year-old head coach I've ever spoken to.
Really?
He's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That's great to hear. Tim Brandl, our guest, again, 4 o'clock tomorrow on Fox, Kansas State and Ames, Iowa. They have Iowa State. Michigan, Penn State, and Nebraska could be part of this conversation. But for our audience, I'll leave it with two teams.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee goes to the Plains tomorrow. Florida State, a historic 35-point home underdog against Clemson. Who's got it worse right now, Tennessee or Florida State?
Tennessee, because they just gave their coach an extension.
I know they did. I mean, Jeremy
Pruitt. You know, I mean, it's been a bad week for Philip Fulmer. I love Philip; he's a good mm-hmm. guy. But Philip we just learned he's got COVID,
right?
And he's also responsible for Jeremy Pruitt getting an extension to his contract before the season started, and they have been just spiraling downward ever since. Listen, that's a COVID-related year. I think everybody gets a mulligan to a certain extent, unless you're Will Muschamp, obviously, at South Carolina. I think most programs and most coaches are going to get mulligans because of the financial circumstances that the sport finds itself in and these schools individually. But Florida State, because you've made the change, Norvell is there, and because it is a COVID year. Anybody that's having to start their careers at a new place in this environment this year,
mm-hmm.
I think clearly gets a mulligan.
Yeah.
And even though they bottomed out a little bit after their big win at home that everybody was going crazy over, I think that his situation is really better than Tennessee's. The expectation level for Pruitt and with that team was so high. I mean, they won 8 games. They barely beat and came from behind to beat a really good Indiana team that was actually going in a better direction than Tennessee was. And those fans could not, they cannot get over the fact that Tennessee has just fallen into the depths of despair after beating an Indiana team that now you'd have to say is the number one story in terms of rags to riches in college football this year.
No doubt.
Yeah. Now, we'll find out if Indiana is as advertised when they play in Columbus tomorrow on Fox. But I mean, look, I still think that the situation in Tennessee is now, look, they're playing an Auburn team that's got its fair share of COVID issues too. But, you know, I don't know that the COVID issues at Auburn are going to offset the quarterback issue at Tennessee. I mean, that one problem, I think, is a bigger issue than, you know, how depth is going to be affected for the Auburn Tigers. I like Auburn to win the game. I actually think Tennessee's not really hit rock bottom yet. I think they can fall even further. Florida State, on the other hand, I think, is coming out of having hit rock bottom. You know, they're in recovery mode, in my opinion. Now, losing Chubb is a tough deal.
That's a big blow.
It also adds, though, to the understanding of the situation Norvell and hopefully the fans of Florida State will comprehend what I'm trying to say. I know fans don't always do, but I hope.
No, those fans are up against it right now, and there's no doubt. Yeah. But, you know, I that fourth quarter against NC State, I thought Purdy showed a lot of heart. And, you know, the previous six games, Tim, for FSU, even against North Carolina when they won, they didn't score in the second half. They scored a combined 18 points, an average of 3 per in their six games against the Atlantic Coast Conference. And they came out and scored 21 against NC State, including 14 in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I was liking what Purdy was doing. I was liking that they have no quit in them, which you can question about Florida State over the last couple of years. Purdy goes down, and I wanted to see him play in these last three games.
No, I hear you. And it probably would have been a big boost to them going towards, you know, the start of next season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right there with you. But I just think that the state of the program at Florida State in this season, not in total, okay, not in total. Florida State is in a much worse position in terms of personnel and potential to bounce back than Tennessee.
Yeah.
Okay, Tennessee's program's at a higher level because of the level of recruits they've gotten. To Pruitt's credit, that's why he got the extension, was because of the level of recruiting that he had done. But I'm saying to you, what's the mindset of the two programs right now going into tomorrow? I think I'd prefer being in Norvell's situation than Jeremy Pruitt's.
Well, I mean, Tennessee, as you know, they've lost 29 of their last 30 to Alabama in Florida, and they have Florida coming up in a couple of weeks, and obviously the Gators right now, one of the best teams right now in the NFL. I think that's going to be 30 out of 31. I mean, how can you explain that to your fan base? 30 of 31 to the Gators and to the Crimson Tide.
Yeah. It's crazy. You know, I can't explain it. It's where we are today. Fans, I think, have to understand, Rick, that we have to live in the moment now. And I know that's also very difficult to do.
Right.
Because they're dragging around with them the history that hasn't gone so well. You know, I was thinking about this, talking about Florida. 1996, and my friend Pat Dooley in Gainesville wrote about this. And he's got a column coming up. He's about to retire, I think, from the Gainesville Sun, which everybody's getting out of the newspaper business. I'm sure he'll be very involved, you know, as a columnist elsewhere, probably on a website and still doing his radio show. But
right before COVID, we played Sawgrass together.
He
left one about 10 feet from the cup on 17.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah. Of course, he missed the putt. He missed the putt, obviously.
I think I got to the island green once. I hit it to within 20 feet, and then I three putted. Mm-hmm. So he's got me there. But in 1996, Danny Werfel's team was 8-0, and they went in to play a 2-6 Vanderbilt team. I was doing those early Jefferson Pilot games back then.
Oh, yeah.
With Dave Rowe, with Radio Rowe, we used to call him, the old Penn State and Oakland Raider nose tackle. And they should have lost that game. They should have lost that game three or four different times. And it was one of those moments where you say, Vanderbilt is, well, that's why they're Vanderbilt. But Florida managed to win, obviously went on, got the rematch, beat Florida State for the national title, but they could have easily lost that game to Vanderbilt. There are times when certain programs just know how to get it done, and then other programs can't get out of their own way, you know. And I think that's a cycle in college football that we see often. And I think right now Tennessee is sort of in that role of Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
They sometimes now just can't get out of their own way.
Brother Bino now, and I'm very interested in this, because before your game, as you mentioned, on Fox, I mean, it is very rare to have two top 10 teams, yet 20.5 points, according to the odds makers, separate these two teams. Brother Bino, what do you think about that?
Hard to play football. But at the same time, when you play at the shoe, the banks of the Olentangy River, Keith Jackson, he talked about. After at the old horseshoe, the banks of the Olentangy, Bino, you got to get it right. Yeah, but whatever. That's the issue. And it doesn't matter whether anyone's there or not. You figure they're home, and Indiana's got enough. They're playing with house money. You get 20.5. I mean, no crowd. You can't dot the I. The band's not playing. I say Indiana, they don't win the game, but they cover the spread.
Ooh, a cover released by Brother Bino. We wrap it up each and every week with the Tim Brando flying the ointment game, please.
Coastal Carolina is I think, beginning. People are beginning to say, you know, this Grayson McCall kid is really, really good, but can we put him up there in the same realm as some of these other great quarterbacks, like the kid at Cincinnati, or the kid at BYU? Nah. So you keep seeing Coastal Carolina slipping a little, and they've done nothing to slip. They're playing Appalachian State tomorrow, early tilt. I think this is a cause game for Coastal. And I know Joe Moglia, with the job he did in putting that program together, all aspects of it, not just the football program, but the entire athletic department, the former CEO of TD Ameritrade, one of the great stories in the history of intercollegiate athletics. I know he's got Jamie Chadwell's, his head coach's attention. And maybe Chadwell's got his, because his name's being mentioned for the South Carolina job.
Yes,
now.
It is.
Coastal Carolina will be playing with an edge, a big edge. And as good as Appalachian State has been, and a real proud banner carrier for the Sun Belt, I think Coastal rolls in this game.
Ooh.
Sends a strong message that they deserve to be back up there, hovering around the top 10.
Conway, South Carolina, the site for that one between Appalachian State and Coastal.
We've got so many great flies in the ointment this year.
Yeah.
This is a fly in the ointment Nirvana season.
And you've Cincinnati, been knocking them out,
BYU,
too. You've been
Coastal
on fire.
Carolina. Oh, my God.
Hey,
oh, my God. That's so good.
Before I let you go, you're the Hall of Fame nomination. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well deserved.
Yeah, the national media group have put my name in nomination for the Hall of Fame. To be honest with you, Rick, I looked at other people that are also nominated this year. And this is the first time I've gotten nominated. I think Tom Jackson, who worked with Chris Berman all those years, is another first-timer, if memory serves me correctly. But I looked at the guys that are in the category with me, and, I mean, they're all A-listers. You know, Dick Stockton? Dick Stockton's not already in?
Man, I grew up listening to him in Boston when he did the Red Sox games.
But I'm really humbled by it, and it means a great deal to see my name, you know, up there with these guys, that these luminaries that have called, you know, national championships and NBA Finals and World Series. It definitely means a lot to me. And you know, at this stage of my career in my life, where I feel like I've got a lot of gas left in my tank, if I don't make it to the promised land this year, just keep my name up there in nomination, and maybe one year I'll get in. I hate to sound like an old cliche-ridden jerk, but it is truly an honor just to be nominated.
Oh, no question. No, and it's well-earned, and you deserve it. So congratulations with that, Timmy B.
Thanks, man. All the best.
All right. Best of luck to you and your family. We'll be off next Friday because of Thanksgiving, so we'll pick it up again in a couple of weeks. Have a great call tomorrow in Ames.
You got it. All the best.
There he goes, Tim Brando, one of the greats, and I love him. I love talking college football with Tim Brando. That's a well-deserved honor for him, and I hope he gets it. But he's right. Just to be nominated is incredible. All right, brought to you by State Farm, number one auto insurance in America. Why not go to the number one agent in Jacksonville? That's Russ Voorhis. Go to RussVoorhis.com. Superior service, product, and great rates. We got much more to get into, including the very latest coming out of Pittsburgh. Brooke Pryor joins us next on 1010XL in 92.5 FM.
Starting the weekend with football. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
All right, thank you very much to Tim Brando. Our weekly conversation with Timmy B. That'll be interesting tomorrow out in Ames. I know the Big 12 doesn't get a lot of play in these parts, but Iowa State playing some good football. Ron Jaworski at the top of the hour. More NFL with him. And, of course, Pittsburgh rolls in the town. A couple of teams absolutely headed in different directions. Pittsburgh, the only undefeated team in the National Football League. The Jags have lost 8 in a row. Pre-game begins at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning on 1010 and 92.5 on the FM. I'll be part of the broadcast from the front row, no longer the sideline, as we'll have in-game at 1, then the entire postgame, including Leon Searcy. Remember, our colleague here, that'll continue into the night, 6 to 8. Will be out at Island Girl. He's got a brand new book out called Fourth and Dam. Still a couple of tickets available. It's the Island Girl out on Gate. And there'll be some former Steelers there, Yancey Thigpen, Ernie Mills, and a whole bunch of former Jags looking really forward to going out there after the game on Sunday. All right, let's bring in Brooke Pryor. She does an outstanding job on the Steelers beat. She is with ESPN.com and ESPN's NFL Nation, and she joins Rick Ballew. Appreciate a couple of minutes, Brooke. How are you?
Not too bad. Excited for some more football this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, first things first, an outdated question, but I'm interested in this because going to Pittsburgh twice in 2017, including the divisional round of the playoffs, if you had asked to name three Steelers, it would have been Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell. How have the Steelers been able to remain this successful after they parted ways with the obvious two?
Yeah, it is pretty impressive, and I think a lot of credit here goes to Mike Tomlin. I mean, he was able to hold this locker room together last year after Roethlisberger gets hurt, and we kind of found out once Bell left, once Antonio Brown left, just how many things Mike Tomlin was juggling at once, trying to keep everybody happy in that locker room. And I think now you have a team, Ben Roethlisberger's back. He is just excited to be back after missing last season with that elbow surgery. I mean, watching him at practice, hearing the way he talks, the way his coaches talk, he's just, you know, quite frankly, giddy to be playing again. And then he has just a group of really young guys around him that are equally as excited to be playing and to be playing at a high level. So, no, they don't have the three superstars, but they kind of have this group that works together in harmony, almost, with Chase Claypool and Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson. They all just really complement each other, and they're a group that they're just so deep that they don't necessarily need the headliners to be successful, that, you know, they're finding strength in the numbers right now.
How much longer for Ben Roethlisberger? I mean, if Pittsburgh wins it, does he walk away, you know, into the sun? Or if he loses, how much of a factor winning it or losing it determines on whether or not he would come back for another year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to have a lot to do with it. But I think the big thing for Ben was, you know, his wife said, hey, if you want to retire, I'm here to support you last year when he was going through the situation with his elbow. And he said, you know, that was never a thought in my mind. And I think that's because he wants to be able to go out on his own terms, and he wanted to prove that he could come back from that elbow surgery and be just as good of a quarterback as he's ever been. And he's been really, really solid this year. It hasn't been the same kind of flashy throws that we saw with Antonio Brown, but he's able to get it done efficiently. And he's able to show that his elbow is not a problem. He still has the deep ball. They're running a lot of shorter routes. So I think that, you know, if they win, I don't know that it necessarily guarantees that if they win the whole thing, that it guarantees that he would retire. But I think that he would be a lot more at peace with the decision if he thought it was time to walk away. And I think if they got all the way to an AFC championship or a Super Bowl and lost, then yeah, that may be motivation for him to come back, especially when you look at the construction of this roster and there isn't necessarily an heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger there. And I think he wants to get the organization through at least to that point. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, kind of my thought, but I think that we're going to see him for at least one or two more years.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I got Ron Jaworski coming up here in about 15 minutes and you look across your state and they're kind of unusual folks in my opinion anyway. In Philadelphia, but they love Jaws. They love Nick Foles, who was here for a year, yet they got on Donovan McNabb. They're getting on Carson Wentz. With that said, where is Roethlisberger when you line him up next to Terry Bradshaw?
Oh, man, that's a good question. You know, I'm not sure. I think that right now, oh, man, that's really tough. And it's even tougher because I've only been here 2 years. So
yeah, I know you were the Kansas City Star, right?
Yeah, it's hard to get a full gauge, but I think that Ben is still beloved in a way because he's helped this team have so much success. And I think that maybe in some ways he was elevated even more last year when he missed the whole season because it became obvious just how much he means to the organization, both as someone that's always there in leading practice, but also as someone that can go out there and win you a game on Sunday that can really take over a game and guarantee that he's able to dictate the course of it. So I think that, you know, he's up there. His value has definitely not gone unnoticed to a fan base when you go through a year where his absence is just so magnified, and having him back now, I think that they really, really appreciate him.
Brooke Pryor, our guest, she covers the Pittsburgh Steelers at ESPN.com. All right, the look ahead, it would be very easy. I mean, next week, next Thursday evening, Thanksgiving evening, there's Baltimore, a huge matchup there. Mike Tomlin, absolutely. I heard his comments earlier in the week about how this is not a Big Ten team taking on a MAC club. It would be very easy to overlook the Jaguars. I mean, they've lost 8 straight games. What's your feeling on them as far as their focus coming in here?
I mean, this is exactly the kind of game that the Steelers have lost in the past. It's a classic Tomlin trap game where you look on paper and you're thinking there is no way they lose this game. And they always seem to have at least one just head scratching what in the world happened loss. And this kind of feels like it's in that vein, but it also felt that way against Dallas. And they managed to pull that one out. So the thing about this team is that even when it seems like they're falling apart or they're taking until the very last play of the very last drive to finish a game, to steal a game, they're still able to pull out a win. And I think that's what makes this team different from Steelers teams of years past and from other teams in the NFL this year is that they started out hot. And even when they went through this cooling off period, they still found a way to win at the end. And that's obviously the most important thing. And I also think that their experience with that Cowboys game where it was so close and they're playing against Garrett Gilbert and Ezekiel Elliott's hurt and they still can't stop the run and Garrett Gilbert's out here playing like an MVP contender. I think that that was a real wake-up call for this team, and that's why the next week when they went out and played the Bengals, that was a very convincing win. And I don't think they're going to be satisfied beating the Bengals in that way and saying, okay, well, we can just coast through the Jaguars before we play the Ravens. I think that they're aware that they can't take any team lightly because they could have happen what nearly happened in Dallas, and you know, all of a sudden your undefeated season is ruined in Jacksonville against a 1-8 team. So I think that they're very aware of the trap narrative, of the idea that a lot of people are overlooking this Jacksonville team, and that on paper, yes, they should win convincingly, but I don't think that they are, that they're looking past it too far, that they're going to be too unfocused for Sunday.
Yeah. You know, let's wrap it up with this. And it's a little unfair because of COVID, and boy, there's been just a ton of injuries this year. I really believe the no off season had an effect on that. So being able to survive week to week is probably half the deal. But despite the 9-0 record, where is this Pittsburgh Steelers team when you match them up with, you know, let's say a Buffalo now, and obviously Kansas City and Baltimore again next Thursday? Where are they here in the AFC?
You know, I think that they're the second best team in the AFC, and they would be the best team in the NFC, but the Chiefs are in the AFC, and even though they do have a loss, I still think that they are far and away the best team because they are just so dominant when they need to be, and you know, outside of the Raiders game, they've just been lights out. So I think, though, the Steelers, they were a solid number two for me for a while, but right now they're making gains on the Steelers. They're making gains on the Chiefs if they continue to play the way that they did against the Bengals. I think that this is a team that has elements that can be that dominant team that can really play like its record. And they, you know, they have had their fair share of injuries, with Devin Bush being out for the year on the ACL injury. Mike Hilton's been out the last couple weeks. But I think that they've been able to manage their injuries and have fewer injuries than most. So to me, they are one of the more complete teams in the AFC and definitely in the league. So I think that they have the makings of being able to make a really deep run in the playoffs. Obviously, still some regular season left to go, but to me, they are trending in the right direction at this point.
Yeah, Mike Hilton looks like he'll be back. And, you know, I noticed this week that, you know, most of the offensive line got the day off on Wednesday. Is that commonplace for Mike Tomlin, or has he expanded that list this year because of everything that's gone on?
No, that's pretty common, at least in the last couple of years, that Wednesdays are vet days for a lot of guys. And also, last season, at about this point, is when they really started to shorten practice, too, to manage those injuries. And it was something the guys really appreciated. And this was about the time that they went on a little bit of a win streak, even with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges rotating at quarterback. So I think that, you know, Mike Tomlin's figured out load management. His players really appreciate him for it. And it's something that I think they're going to continue to do throughout this season so that they don't run into some injury situations without having, you know, a bye in the second half of the season.
Hey, Brooke, great stuff. I really appreciate a few moments of your time. Best of luck down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
There she goes, Brooke Pryor. Does a really nice job there with ESPN.com covering the Pittsburgh Steelers. Remember her with the Kansas City Star, and now she is over in Pittsburgh. So I just wanted to ask that question about Bell and Brown because, you know, Bell sat out an entire year. It's been a disaster for him ever since, and we'll see what happens to KC. And, you know, the Antonio Brown thing, you know, that looked like it was a brilliant move now for Pittsburgh. You know, a cup of coffee in Oakland, a cup of coffee in New England. We'll see what happens with Brown. You know, now in Tampa, there's an investigation ongoing with the surveillance camera and throwing a bike and all that. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, and, you know, Pittsburgh didn't blink. And again, the bottom line for Pittsburgh, you know, it's not about winning this game here on Sunday. They need to get back to a Super Bowl. That's how they're measured. Now, you look at three coaches in the last 51 years with Chuck Knoll, with Bill Cowher, with Mike Tomlin. Right? Mike Tomlin was the youngest head coach to ever win a Super Bowl at the age of 36. He is incredibly successful. But the last time the Steelers were in the playoffs was when they lost to the Jaguars in January of 2018, the 2017 season. They have only won three playoff games since 2010. Think about that for a moment. Three playoff games. And this being their 11th year. That doesn't cut it in that market. It just does it. And, you know, this is a very successful franchise. We've had 54 Super Bowls. There's only been 20 of the 32 teams in the history of the NFL that have won Super Bowls. six of those by the Steelers, six of those by the Patriots. I mean, 12 of the 32 teams in the NFL have never won a Super Bowl, including teams like Minnesota and Buffalo, who are 0-4. Now, there's only four teams in the history of the league that have never been. Unfortunately, the Jaguars are one of those four teams. Houston being another. It is also Detroit and Cleveland. Only four teams out of the 32 who have never been to a Super Bowl. All right, thank you to Brooke Pryor. Good stuff there. Brought to you by Wren Beach Rentals. If you're looking for a home to rent, whether it's for a weekend, for a week, for a month, for any period of time. Now, how about the Knights of Lights in St. Augustine right now going on? Maybe you want to rent out there anywhere from South Ponte Vedra all the way to Volano Beach. Just go to WrenBeachRentals.com. It's W-R-E-N, BeachRentals.com, facing the Atlantic Ocean. 40 homes to choose from. Again, it can be just you and your wife, you and your girlfriend. It can be your family. It can be for as many as 16 people. Okay, they have all different types and sizes. And again, it can be for a weekend, a week, a month. So it's just incredible what they are able to offer. 40 homes, South Ponte Vedra, all the way to Volano Beach. WrenBeachRentals.com. That's W-R-E-N, BeachRentals.com. Coming up next, we talk with Ron Jaworski. He goes into the night with Rick Ballew.
The weekend is underway. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
All right, with you till 7 tonight. Next time I'll talk with you will be during the Jaguars pregame beginning at 8 a.m. I won't be up that early for it, but certainly be in the broadcast front row, no longer on the sideline because of COVID. That's the way things are, and I'm not complaining. Pittsburgh rolls in the town. They will take on the Jaguars. Ron Jaworski is one of the greats in the NFL. He is also a tremendous broadcaster, and he joins Rick Ballew here on the home of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Joss, how you been?
Rick, I could not be better. Well, except for this COVID that we're dealing with right now. It certainly put a difficult stamp on this NFL season, but I'm healthy, I'm safe, doing a little bit of work, having some fun, and can't complain.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. All right, I want to get right to it.
Sure.
Will the Jets lose again? Will the Jets win a game?
Yeah, that's why you threw me off with that, Rick.
I'm sorry. Joss.
I find it hard to believe a team can go 0-16 in the National Football League. I really do, because I have incredible respect for teams, organizations, players, the coaches. And teams always seem to find a way to win a game. And I was going to say, I called that Jets game against the Patriots a couple weeks ago on Monday night up in North Jersey. And with Flacco at quarterback, they looked like a organized offense and a much better football team. You know, Joe brings the strong arm. He can attack the entire field, and he can make those big throws down the field, which obviously today's NFL produces points. So, Joe's going to start this week out in San Diego, so I expect they'll give the Chargers a run for their money. And I just think they'll find a way to win maybe one game.
Yeah. Okay, I know you're a tape wizard with our good friend Brian Baldinger and others. Have you dove into the college tape yet with these quarterbacks, or is that something you'll wait to do after the season?
Yeah, it's been kind of a crazy season, and normally I would wait till after the Super Bowl before I really do some extensive study on the quarterbacks, but I watch games, and you mentioned my buddy Baldy. You know, we both share offices over at NFL Films, and that's where we get all the tape, and we can watch everything and break it down and really see how the game is played, not only at the NFL level, but when we start looking at the collegiate players. You get a real good insight when you can look at the All-22, as you know, Rick. That's really the key to what the pro people do when they study these quarterbacks. Sure, they watch the TV, and you get some good things coming off the TV screen, but at the end of the day, you really need to see the nuances of quarterback play, the defenses that they play against, and how they challenge them. So you always glean some information from TV, but I think the film study is number one.
All right, Gardner Minshew will miss his third straight game. There's no telling when, in fact, he will be back. Many believe, despite impressive numbers, Jaws, that he has regressed this year. What have you seen in Gardner Minshew?
Yeah, I really wouldn't say that. You know, that's not my feeling. I get, you know, the quarterback at the end of the day is only going to be as good as his supporting cast, and you have to, you know, it all starts. You know, I've been around this league since 1973 when I was drafted by the L.A. Rams, played 17 years, and when I retired in 1990, I started really studying the game even more, and I've come to realize I've seen a lot of quarterbacks come and go. Some that the great pedigree coming out of college, but they end up with a bad football team. They end up with a bad organization that doesn't know how to build a football team. And that usually is the demise of these quarterbacks that are talented. And I think Minshew falls into that category. You know, he had a big splash when he came on the scene replacing Nick Foles and showed some really good things. But at the end of the day, you know, if you can't run the football, if you can't have the short intermediate passing game to set up the deep game, if you can't run the screen game, the bubble screen game to keep defense honest, your performance goes south. And I think to a certain degree, that's what happens with Minshew. The people around him have not performed as well as they need to.
You know, back when you played in that era, toughness was such a part of the game and the competitiveness came out and maybe you would hide an injury. Today, that can't be the case. There's got to be transparency. And Gardner elected that route. What was your thought on that, not telling the trainers or not telling Doug Marrone that, in fact, he was injured?
Well, I respect the toughness of Minshew. And at the end of the day, you have to have that. But you also have to be judicious in how you handle your body and how you do play. And you know, since we're talking about quarterbacks and you – collegiate guys, one of the first things I look for is toughness in the pocket. Because when you get to the National Football League, you are going to get hit and you're going to hit hard. And one of the things I look for is that quarterback that will hang in the pocket, stay on that back leg, and deliver the football with people in his face. That's a toughness you have to have. And if you don't have that toughness, you get exposed real quick at the NFL level. So I look for that toughness in the collegiate quarterbacks. And quite honestly, there are some quarterbacks in the NFL right now that I have some few concerns about. They won't hang in the pocket. They want to leave too early and won't take that bullet because you have to hang there at the last second before you deliver the football.
Final moment with Ron Jaworski joining us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM with Rick Ballew. They're Hall of Fame quarterbacks, you know, Brady, Breeze, Rivers, but are they really becoming dinosaurs? I mean, the drop-back quarterback who really can't move all that well, and I know Drew Brees has had a little bit of a success with his feet, but are those days about ending for quarterbacks?
I don't believe so. I certainly see the trend, Rick, that you're talking about. You know, when you watch the Russell Wilsons and the Kyler Murrays, these guys that are, you know, darting out of the pocket. I think more of that, in my opinion, is the collegiate schemes that are coming now to the National Football League. You know, these 3, 4, and even 5 wide receivers on the field at one time and using the quarterbacks to boot outside and get outside the pocket. I'm seeing more of that collegiate-style offense coming to the NFL, and that's why these guys obviously look a little different. And I'll also maybe chime in with this, Rick. I think when Roger Goodell, and I say this in a positive way, changed the way the game is played at the NFL level, you know, and making the game safer, you know, protecting players. And again, I agree with him, but I think to a certain degree it opened up the game to all these passes, you know, where you can't, you know, whack these guys coming in these in routes, and you can't only hit them in certain areas, and your target zone is very limited. I think it's opened the game up to the more wide-open style that we see coming in from the collegiate ranks and these young quarterbacks that can dart from the pocket and make plays. And I say it in a good way, but I think it's opened it up. But I think maybe to a certain degree, it's limited the ability of some of these quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But Rick, I still believe that the passing game is about timing and rhythm. And, you know, take a guy like Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. You know, he has regressed. There is no doubt he has regressed. And then you study, you know, why has he regressed? Well, maybe the old line, maybe the players around him. But I think, number one, I don't think his abilities are being exposed by the coaching staff. And Doug Peterson's won a Super Bowl. He's a good coach. They've got an excellent coaching staff. But sometimes you get a little bit lost in your thinking, and sometimes you got to bring it back to earth, and that is balance on offense. We always talk about the quarterbacks, their arm strength, their wide receivers, but I believe at the end of the year, like we seem to find out every year, maybe in Kansas City last year a little different, teams that use a foundation of balance on offense, run the ball effectively, and pass the ball effectively is the best approach to me for success long-term in the NFL.
Well said. Hey, leave us with this, Jaws. You know, we don't know what's going to happen here as far as the front office. We don't know what's going to happen with the staff. But this team could have, depending on the ceiling with the salary cap, they could have $100 million. They're going to have two picks in the first round, two picks in the second round. Hell, they could have the first or second pick. How long will it take to rebuild the Jacksonville Jaguars?
3 years. 3 years. And you got to understand that. You got to be committed to it. It's going to take 3 years. And you mentioned money under the cap. Who knows what will happen in the front office and with the coaching staff. I will say this. You know, I played with Doug Marrone in 1987 and 1988 in Miami. You know, I know Jay Gruden very, very well. These guys are really good coaches. They work their tail off for success. Because they haven't won doesn't mean they're not good at their craft. They are really good. As I started this conversation out, it's not the one coach or the coordinator or the defense or the quarterback. To build a winning football team, you've got to build a winning organization at every single level, Rick.
You are the best, Jaws.
Hey, great to be with you.
Always good. Always good to talk with you. We'll do it again soon. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, sir. My pleasure.
There he goes. Ron Jaworski. In my opinion, he's an ambassador for the NFL. I mean, whenever you see him, he's a happy guy. I mean, for years you saw him on ESPN. He's doing, I think, Monday night games now, I believe at Westwood One, or I don't know the particular company he's doing Monday night color analyst work with, but he's just a guy who gushes NFL. And he's made his whole life around it. Really, truly one of the and I don't know him all that well. I obviously know Brian Baldinger very well. And those two live in the NFL films room studying film with Greg Cosell, another, you know, phenomenal guest that we are able to get on into the night with us quite a bit. So there you have it. 3 years, according to Jaws. And listen, I set him up for the Minshew, and he didn't go with it. You know, I got the feeling from Jaws that he believes Minshew can still play a little bit. We will see. It's Jake Luton under center, his third start coming up on Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, Blue and RJ Saunders, we are going to make our picks. I'll have our Florida State report coming up in a little bit. That is brought to you by Chenat Tree Chiropractic. We'll check out high school football playoffs. Hacker Nation will join us later in the hour. Our friend RJ Saunders is here. He has a player profile. It is brought to you by JOI.
Antonio Clary is one of the can't-miss guys in college football for Virginia. Clary played safety and wide receiver at Sandalwood High School for head coach Adam Gase. Finishing 2018 with 53 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, and 3 interceptions, he earned first-team All-Cedar Run District honors as a utility player in 2017. He was also an All-Conference honoree as a sophomore. He also ran a little bit of track while at Sandalwood, was noted as a 3-star recruit by ESPN.com, Rivals.com, and 247Sports.com. This season, he's appeared in 6 of UVA's 7 games with 2 starts, making a tackle against NC State. He made 4 tackles and a half a tackle for loss and broke up a pass against Wake Forest. He made his first collegiate start this season at number 11 Miami and finished with 7 tackles and a half a sack. He also made 2 tackles and 1 tackle for loss in a win over number 15 North Carolina, and also made 7 tackles and forced and recovered a fumble against Louisville. This year, he's already recorded 21 total tackles, 10 of which being solo. He's already making Duval proud, and he's looking to continue to dominate the defensive end on Saturday as Virginia takes on Abilene Christian at 4 p.m.
The weekend with football. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
With you till 7 o'clock, my name is Rick Ballew alongside our producer. He has been very busy today. RJ Saunders, Timmy Brando, Brooke Pryor, Ron Jaworski. We will get to our picks in just a couple of minutes. It is time for our Florida State weekly report, and it's going to be probably the shortest report I've ever given. It is brought to you by Shenachi Chiropractic, all right, right there on University, right across the street from JU. I can't say enough about it. As a matter of fact, I felt a little twinge today in the middle of my back. You're too young. You haven't felt any twinges yet, right? You're only 25.
Absolutely. No, absolutely I felt a twinge. All that basketball I played?
At 25, you're feeling twinges?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what? Would you say back spasms?
No, but I mean, I've had a back spasm before, and that's real, real bad. I'm just talking about I got it in the middle of the back where I think it's about time that I go see Dr. Mike and get the adjustment once again.
Oh, man.
Love it. Oh, man, I love it. And, you know, stretches me out phenomenally. You get the back adjusted. I don't think I've been over there for probably 6 or 7 months. Because I don't need it. And, you know, the last time I went with the acupuncture. I told you, I was hammered. And I fell coming out of the shower after playing golf. And I destroyed my my butt bone. And I was down and out for like 3 months. And it was incredibly painful. Acupuncture there as well. So if you have pain, you have tension, you have problems with the lower back, you have neck pain, I had neck surgery. I mean, it comes up every once in a while. I have a stiff neck. I have a bad back, man. Shenachi Chiropractic, it's worth $1 million. It's unbelievable. So thank you to them, the official chiropractor as well for JU Athletics. They're sensational. It's right across the street from JU at University on University Boulevard. Their number is 743-6700. Better yet, just check them out online. Go to Shenatry. Shenatry Chiropractic. All right. Florida State sucks, and they're a 35.5-point home underdog against Clemson. I don't know if I've ever felt worse about Florida State in my life, although let the record reflect, might have been 2008 when Florida State played Florida. I just said, screw this. And I remember I was out in Palm Coast. My buddy Vic, who owned the Chicago Pizzas, he's no longer in town. He's out in the Dominican Republic. But anyway, I said, screw this. I'm not going to sit around and get beat up all day. Let's go play golf. So we played out there at Hammock Beach, and it was unbelievable. And to this day, and if you know me, I'm a film guy. I'm not like Jaws, but I watch the games. And I go back and rewatch them. To this day, I haven't watched that game when the 2000, I think it was 2008, Florida just destroyed Florida State. I kind of feel that way about tomorrow. I don't know what it is that I want to do. Maybe I'll just take a long walk up and down Phillips Highway. I don't know, but it's high noon tomorrow. It's Clemson. Clemson has not played in 14 days. Clemson has not played since they lost to Notre Dame. Clemson is getting back Trevor Lawrence. They're going into God's country tomorrow, and Chubba Purdy is out. Okay? That's for starters. Jordan Travis is going to get the start. You want to make a bet? Here's one for you. Jordan Travis doesn't finish the game. What are the chances of him surviving 60 minutes of football tomorrow against Brent Venables and that defense? Here's one for you. Zero. You can absolutely take it to the bank right now. And I love Jordan Travis. He has got, you know, he is a man. But he has got zero chance of surviving this game tomorrow. So Blackman's left. Purdy's under the knife. Travis gets knocked out. Tate Rodemaker, who the next time we see him will be probably a transfer playing for, Virginia. I don't know. Wake Forest. I don't know. North Carolina State. And he'll beat FSU, let's say, in the year 2022. But he's going to be the guy that I think will get the bulk of the playing time on Saturday because Travis will get knocked out. It's going to be a bloodbath. I don't recommend that any Seminole fans watch it. If you do, make sure you are incredibly inebriated. All right? That's my only advice for you. 35 and a half points. And still growing. All the money on Clemson. Damn it! Fix it! Fix it in Tallahassee! Fix the damn thing in Tallahassee! Get to our picks each and every week. Brought to you by NASCAR. It's customize your golf cart. Hey, why not get a Seminole golf cart? That's kind of groovy, right? Maybe a Gator one. Maybe a Jaguar one. NASCAR's right there. Phillips Highway. Right behind the Nocatee exit, if you will. Going off Phillips, that little... It's that gas station right there. I think it's a gate. I'm not sure what it is. But anyway, it's right behind there. Phenomenal place. Used golf carts, brand new golf carts. $24 mobile service. Say you're out on your golf cart and all of a sudden you have an issue like a battery that's dead. You can do that as well. All right, call them. $24 mobile service. Just go to NASCARTS.com. Right there in Ponte Vedra. All right, here we go. Our picks. Last week, Ballou 8-2, RJ Saunders 8-2. Season standings, the truth teller at 50-20. RJ Saunders at 46-20. Four. It is a high noon matchup in the Big Ten. Number 3, Ohio State. Number 9, Indiana. It's in Columbus. What? Ohio State favored by 20.5? Couple of top 9 teams? Something's got to give. However, I'm not taking the bet or the bait. Give me the Buckeyes. How about you?
Yeah, I wouldn't take the bet either, but I am rooting for our future quarterback, Justin Fields in the Ohio State.
Yeah, we didn't get to see him play last week against Maryland. That was one of many that was suspended or canceled. What did you say earlier? Stanford now has been canceled?
Stanford versus Washington State due to COVID concerns from Washington State. So that's the 17th game this weekend that has been canceled.
Wow. 17. Tennessee, they're pretty awful as well. They go to the Plains. How do you see it? Auburn.
Oh, give me Auburn.
Yep, I'll take Auburn as well. Tennessee, you're real bad. Tim Randall says you're worse off than Florida State. Can you imagine being worse than Florida State right now? Tennessee, you're pathetic. You've lost 29 of your last 30 to Alabama. 29 of your last 30 combined to Alabama. Just leave. Just get out of the SEC. For crying out loud. It is Bedlam. It is Oklahoma State. It's the Pokes. They're going to Sooner Land. Give me Oklahoma.
Ooh. I think I'm going to take Oklahoma State.
Well, do you think or are you going to pick Oklahoma State?
I'll pick.
Oklahoma State is in for RJ Saunders. Your neck of the woods, your team. You have a USC sweatshirt on right now? Or is that a Florida State sweatshirt? What is that?
That's Southern California.
That is Southern Cal. That is Southern Cal. USC goes to Utah. Which way are you going?
Southern Cal. That's where I'm going. I mean, listen, didn't they pull off? Like, they pulled off two big comeback wins. I say they do it a third time. Well, I say they win straight out. They shouldn't have to come back.
Cardiac kids, says RJ. I'm going to go the other way here. Give me Utah at home. Typically the most physical team in the Pac-12. I like USC. I mean, heck. For 7 years, when I worked out of Chicago, we were the home of the Trojans. I used to go each and every year to the USC-UCLA game. What's there not to love about the Trojans? I just think Utah is going to beat them. let's shift our attention. Only four games this week in college football with all of the cancellations. Instead, we have six for you in the National Football League. Drew Brees out. Jameis Winston in, right? No! No, he's not in! What the hell is going on right now in New Orleans? I mean, is this some gamemanship? Or is Sean Payton really up to something? Reports say Taysom Hill, who has never thrown more than two passes in a game, is going to be under center Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons. I'm up. Give me Atlanta on the road. That's the way I'm going.
Oh, jeez. I want to trust them. So forget it. I am. Give me New Orleans.
And you know what? I'll be all for it if Jameis comes off the pine. I love me some Jameis Winston. I loved it when Florida State was crooked. I loved it when Florida State let the players run the asylum. I loved it when Florida State won as compared to the you-know-what show that's going on over there right now. Jameis Winston, I got you, brother. I hope he gets an opportunity, but there's some weird reports coming out of Louisiana right now. New England goes to Houston. How do you see it?
Give me the Texans, Rick.
I'm going to take New England on the road. They've won two games now in a row after losing four straight. I don't know what to make of Houston. I really don't. They can't stop anyone. New England played with a lot of effort the other night. I'm going to take the Patriots coming off a high of getting it done against the Baltimore Ravens. Green Bay goes to Indianapolis. I am so tempted in this game to pick the Colts. But I'm not. Devontae Adams is going to play. You know, he went out against Jacksonville last week with a bad ankle, came back, scored the game-winning touchdown. Green Bay just didn't play well against Jacksonville. I think they'll be fired up. It's not that long of a trip going from Wisconsin to Indianapolis. I like Green Bay on the road. How do you see it?
Give me the Packers. Go, Pack, go!
Right back to you, R.J. Saunders. Philadelphia goes to Cleveland. Whenever you match the Eagles and the Browns, I mean, are you kidding me? This is what the NFL is all about.
I'm going to fly like an eagle. Give me Philadelphia.
I'm going the other way here. I'm going Cleveland. I mean, what do you think I'm going to say? That I think Cleveland's looking ahead for their matchup next week against Jacksonville?
Ooh.
You think I'm going to say that?
No.
No? Not going to go that way with you. Philly at Cleveland. All right, we got some different picks here. I like it. Tennessee at Baltimore. I will take the Ravens to respond. Remember what happened in January, though. All right, Mike Vrabel and company. Yulee's Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill. They loaded up. They went into Baltimore and won. They won in New England and they won. Which way are you going?
I can't go against Baltimore, so I'm not. Give me the Ravens.
RJ takes Baltimore. We wrap it up with Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Steelers. They come here to Jacksonville. Pre-game at 8, in-game at 1, post-game to follow. Leon Searcy, who played for both organizations. He will have his book signing, his party, over at Island Girl on Gate from 6 to 8. Plenty of former players. Should be a great party. I'm looking forward to it. Which way are you going? That's my turn, right? No. I pick Baltimore first. You're up. It doesn't matter. We're going to pick the same team.
The Steelers are going to lose. Not this Sunday, though. Give me the Steelers.
Yeah. Next Thursday, probably, against Baltimore. I tend to agree with you. All right. Let's see here. Who did you pick? You picked Auburn.
Yes.
So we had opposite picks. Saunders going Oklahoma State. I took Oklahoma. Saunders took the University of Southern California. I took the Utah Utes. Ballou took Atlanta going into New Orleans. With all those whispers, RJ said, don't give me any of that. Jameis will get it done.
No, actually, can I switch my pick? last minute?
If you want, but
I would like Atlanta.
The whole world of SATs, PSATs, multiple choice tests, typically when you change your answer, it's to the wrong answer.
It's true.
Let me talk you out. I'll keep it.
No, we need to have this, man.
Come on, you can't go back and forth like that.
We need parity. I'll keep my pick. I'll keep it.
It's a good thing we're not talking politics right now, or I would destroy you.
Oh, definitely.
You can't make up your mind. Who do you want, RJ?
I'll keep my pick. We need parity. We need parity on this show. I'll keep my pick. Houston.
You went with Houston. I went with New England. You went with Philly. I went with Cleveland. So there you go. 5 of the 10 are different. Standings look like this. Blue 50 and 20. RJ Saunders is 46 and 24.
The weekend is underway. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
All right, talking a lot about Sunday here, pregame at 8, in-game at 1, and then the postgame. And talking about Leon Searcy's brand new book that is out. All right, he will be out at Island Girl at Gate, along with our next guest, Hacker Nation. That is the fifth quarter. Right here on the home of the Jags. Of course, Hacker joins us now for high school football playoff talk. But that's going to be a lot of fun out there on the road. I know in the days gone by, you've been known to have a cigar.
Yeah, Rick, looking forward to that, man. No question about it. We're going to be out there, Island Girl, Gate Parkway. Get out there probably around 5:30. Should go on the air close to 6. Show will wrap up at 8. And then needless to say, we may indulge a little bit after the broadcast.
I guess. I mean, I'm getting dropped off. I'm having my GI. And I remember years ago when you and I went out and Ty went on before your married days, you said you got incredibly hung over by a cigar.
Yeah, well, that was my first realm into the Cuban cigars back in the day, Rick. I guess the statute of limitations has passed at this point. But, yeah, a little more of a solid cigar smoker now than maybe I was 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying this. I know it's a bold cigar that Leon has, and I only really like a bold cigar if I've had a couple of cocktails. So I talked to him about it, and looking forward to joining you guys out there. That'll be at Island Girl on Gate coming up from 6 till 8. Tickets are nearly sold out, so you need to call over there. There's only a few left, but that's going to be a lot of fun. All right, high school football. For some of these young men, it'll be their final football game ever. My goodness, some great ones tonight. Hacker, let's begin with Oakleaf and Bartram Trail.
Yeah, probably the best game of the area involving two local teams. Now, there's a lot of teams, Rick, tonight playing teams from Tallahassee, Pensacola, et cetera. But the ones I highlighted for you are games that are local versus local. And this Bartram-Oakleaf matchup, Bartram's the best team in St. Johns County. Oakleaf is the best team in Clay County. This is a rematch of a game on October 23rd that Bartram won 30-27 when they hit a 54-yard field goal with 90 seconds to go. This is a terrific 8A playoff game. Should be a lot of fun tonight down at Bartram Trail High School.
All right. How about Raines, Baker County?
Yeah, Raines won last week, eliminating Westside. Raines is playing some good football right now. Baker County comes into tonight at 7-2. They had a forfeit last week. Panama City Arnold could not play last week. That put Baker into this round. Baker's got to go to the graveyard. It's going to be a really interesting game. I think it could go either way, but does Raines maybe have a little bit of an advantage because they're at home tonight? We will see here in a matter of moments.
All right. Trinity Christian Episcopal.
I mean, you look at Verlin Dormany, the head coach of Trinity on one sideline, Mark Brunell, the head coach of Episcopal on the other. These are the last two 3A programs remaining in the area. The winner tonight advances. The loser goes home. The one thing about Trinity, Rick, in their last 7 games, they've allowed 28 points combined.
How many games?
7. So they're averaging 4 points a game given up over the last 7. So, you know, look, Mark Brunell's known for offense. Episcopal's got a great offense. But clearly they're playing a really good defense tonight.
Wow, that's going to be interesting. That's Trinity Christian against Episcopal. All right, let's wrap it up with Menendez taking on Orange Park.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight this one. This is a great story. Menendez suffered a head coaching change at the beginning of the year. Orange Park started the year 0-4, and here we are. One of these teams tonight will be one of the last eight 5A teams remaining in the state. It goes to show you that you keep playing, you keep battling every week, good things will happen. Menendez and Orange Park, again, the winner of that game tonight will be in the Elite Eight, if you will, in the state of Florida in the 5A classification. Will be one of the better stories that we've had this season.
All right. Hacker, set the slate. What's coming up tonight? Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, the last Friday Night Lights postgame show of the year, Rick. When you sign off, there's going to be a pregame getting ready for Bowles and Fernandina Beach. You'll hear that on both 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Fernandina, very excited for this opportunity to get Bowles here in round two of the playoffs. And once that game goes final, again, we'll have the final Friday Night Lights postgame of the year. Victoria's head coaches, plenty of analysis. Rick, if you love high school football, man, you're in the right place. We'll take you all the way to midnight for the final time here in 2020.
Yeah, going to be a blast, no doubt about it. That is coming up right now. Hacker, have a great night. I'll see you over there at Island Girl on Sunday.
Thanks, Rick. Looking forward to it, man.
Yep, that's going to be a blast, no doubt about it. All right, great high school stuff. And I always, feel for kids when – you know, this is it. I called them young men earlier, now kids. I mean, this is their final game, you know, for a lot of these high school kids. I mean, some go on and play college to some extent, but it's tough when you hang it up for the final time in any sport. And for a lot of these individuals, that will be it. So some great stuff happening as far as playoff football coming up tonight. All right, that's going to do it. We're going to wrap things up. RJ, you got big plans this weekend. What are you doing? Are you going to be able to make it over there? You run the fifth quarter, don't you?
I run the fifth quarter show, so I'll be here again while you guys enjoy the festivities of drinks and cigars and books from Leon Searcy.
I was going to buy you a big, bold cigar and watch your head explode. And now that's not going to happen.
I think you would take enjoyment in seeing that, Rick.
Let me guess. You've never had a sip. You've certainly never had a cigar before.
Never.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, listen, you're a wholesome, young individual. What's there not to love about our good friend, RJ Saunders? All right, that'll do it. Thank you to everyone for joining us. Ron Jaworski. That was a lot of fun. From ESPN.com, Brooke Pryor, who covers the Pittsburgh Steelers, and, of course, our weekly conversation with Fox Sports' Tim Brando. He will have that game tomorrow at 4 o'clock on Fox. Chubba Purdy's brother, Brock Purdy, and Iowa State, maybe one of the great surprise teams of 2020, playing host to Kansas State. The next time I talk to you will be during the Jaguars pregame on Sunday, and of course, in game as well. It all begins at 8 a.m. on 1010 on the AM side and 92.5 FM as well. Then on Monday, we will be back from 6 until 8 o'clock. Folks, have a sensational weekend. I will see you at the bank on Sunday and talk with you then. I'm Rick Ballew.